It's like when everyone went away, Johnny.
Is that what you think?
Let's talk about that.
We're back, guys.
We missed a week.
We did. We didn't even put out like the throwback to try to fool people and be like, oh, I've heard this.
No, we did not. It was an interesting week. So I don't know if you guys heard, but there's been a little bit of weather.
But everybody has weather. That's the thing, too. It's like, I know we're going to tell our weather stories, but do you really think people want to hear our weather stories?
I think mine's pretty interesting.
There I was. There was ice.
Yeah, well, if you say it like that, it makes it make me sound like an idiot. So,
well, here's the thing. We probably have some northern listeners.
Yeah.
And they're already rolling their eyes because they're like, here we go. These Tennessee boys are going to tell about the time that they couldn't get their cars down the road and a little bit of ice.
Okay. See, you...
That's what I'm saying. That's like, I don't agree with that. I'm just saying that's what's happening.
You kind of sound like you agree with it.
I don't, because we don't have the trucks and the brine and the treatments.
I do have the truck. That's the thing.
No. I'm saying, like, when we get snow, what I'm defending the position that this idea that people drive better on ice in Massachusetts. Well, they plow it the next day. Right. You're good, pretty
much. You keep chains in your trunk and stuff.
Right, you know what I'm saying? No, it's not just that. It's not just your preparedness. It's the city's preparedness versus Tennessee's preparedness for snow.
How many times could you say preparedness?
Our preparedness is perplexing.
Perpetual preparedness is what they...
Yeah.
Listen, guys, I don't... If my northern
like, nobody can drive on ice. It's ice.
I don't know
what I'm saying? You can move across it. But it's not ideal. There's pileups everywhere when there's ice. Even if you see a northern state, they have wrecks too. People get into jams.
Do you think that there are people in the north?
Yeah.
We've said this before. There are northern.
I do think there are people in the north, John. I would like
thanks
to go
for
on
listening, guys.
We solved it.
This has been Geography with John and Johnny. No, listen, do you think that there are more rednecks in the north than there are in the south?
I think rednecks are everywhere. And they're so... It's just, you know, Jeff Foxworthy used to say that. He would say being a redneck is just, what did he say? It's an obliviousness to sophistication. And I think, so every, you know, like I've been in North Dakota, South Dakota. It's just, it's pickups and tobacco, spit, and it's, you know, there's a lot of that. I'm just not trying to generalize them either, but I'm saying, like, it surprises me when I go everywhere that I see the same people that you think are only in Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky,
and
whatever.
I think when we go north, they're very disappointed that we're not more rednecky.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my level of
Well, I've had people say to me they expected my accent to be a lot thicker when they heard that I was from Tennessee. Now, I vary it. I probably vary the intensity of my accent in my show because it makes me a little more likable maybe or whatever. It's almost like a character.
No, I get you.
I'm amplifying myself. But I have a southern accent, but it's probably, since I speak for a living, it's probably some of that's been weeded out to some degree. So yeah, people are disappointed that I'm not just like, hey, y'all want to go out for Italian? You know,
my grandfather said Italian.
Oh, Italian's the best.
He said Italian. By the way, I said the word ambulance the other day, which I have stricken from my vernacular.
You put the accent on the am.
Yeah, we were sitting in bed talking, and I was like, yeah, remember that? Okay, yeah, to tell you what it was, is I was complaining about something, and earlier that evening, I'd been driving back. It was really late from volleyball practice, and there was a pediatric ambulance that came by, headed like out east, so something was not good, from Vanderbilt, heading like past Mount Juliet, which is bad. That means like Vanderbilt. If you need to get your kid to Vanderbilt and the ambulance is going that way, emergency traffic, something's really, really wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To get back. So I was like, having this moment, like, you know what? It could be worse. You know, I need to be grateful because, my gosh, you know, we're not riding in a pediatric ambulance.
Accent on the lance, yeah.
She looks at me, she's
ambulance.
Like, what? I knew as soon as I said it. I tried to go on past it because that's one of the first things we said in Nashville is ambulance. Andrew says it.
Sometimes there's words that come along that have been around forever, but when they become in the vernacular of Americans, we realize that there's different ways that we pronounce them. The one that I remember the most was during the Anita Hill hearings, Clarence Thomas, when sexual harassment became a thing. Like, we knew sexual harassment was a thing, but it became a thing. And I would watch these trials, and these guys would say, harassment.
Yeah, harassment.
And I'd be like, huh?
What?
What is harassment?
Yeah.
Sounds like a dude named Harris. But then there'd be, it's harassment, it's a harassment, and then some senator would just hand off and just pronounce it, you know, you could tell what part of the country they were from. So somebody, maybe if you could, you don't want to get in a harassment by an ambulance would be a bad scene.
Well, you know, my wife's company is like partly located in the United States and partly in Canada.
Yeah.
And so people on her call all the time will hear them say process.
Oh, yeah.
And I could have swore I heard my wife say process the other day on a call.
And I do that.
Because they love, Laura's very good at what she does. And they she's also has such a Southern way about her. There's such like, I will hear people on the calls because they're in speakers and I'll be like, can we just talk? Because you got to think, they're on calls all day long.
Yeah.
And speaking with my wife is a delight because she's kind. And, well, how are the kids? Well, tell me. And she remembers everybody. She knows your cousin's dog, what happened to them if you told her 6 months ago. So all this, like, it's not just Southern charm, but she is charming. And then you add the Southern part to it.
Yeah.
It's like they really like it. So to hear the Southern belle say process, I don't know what to do with it. I almost called an ambulance.
Oh.
Hey, call that a callback, kids.
Then she got off the phone and there was some harassment. Hey-o.
Am I right?
Anyway, in the workplace. So you're right. But it's like we love it. English accents are always charming. You could say anything in an English accent. It's immediately charming. I think Southern accents.
Call an ambulance.
Some people like it because it sounds very demure. It sounds like there's a, you know, it's a little slower. But then some people assume that obviously there's the whole, you know, the trope about Southerners being stupid. So if you say something in Southern accent, oh, here we go, you know, this guy. Which I have some of the jokes in my show about that, about how we get disrespected or whatever. But yeah, there is an interesting thing. But yeah, what I do, what you were talking about with Laura, I have a hard time not, if I'm around a group that is talking a certain way, I have a hard time not picking up their, whatever their rhythm and cadence is. I think that has something to do with like wanting to be accepted by them, maybe.
Maybe.
Like there's an internal.
I don't know. Maybe it's positive. Maybe it's like.
But it's like mirroring is a psychological thing that you do to make people feel comfortable anyway.
Right.
Like if you're trying to make somebody feel comfortable that you're counseling with and they sit a certain way and they cross their legs, you should cross your legs.
Right.
Have you ever heard that before?
Well, I've always heard not to have
a... You don't want to do like where they know they're being manipulated, but like you do it to... It's like a little signal you send.
Yeah.
Some people do it without knowing it.
I've always just been told in counseling circles just to make yourself not demonstrative or intimidating in the way you're sitting. Like, make sure your chair is lower. Make sure, like, you know, you don't want to stand or position yourself. You don't want to put your hands behind your head. Like, these are all, like, things that...
Like arm folding is always bad because it says like it's almost like you're trying to protect yourself,
right?
Or like you're like, yeah, I'm buying this. Like you may as well be chewing gum. Yeah, I'm buying this. What happened then? Tell me about your kids again. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's your time.
Yeah,
but I do that in when I do stand up. I leave the mic in the stand now, and a lot of that's just about my comfort level. And I found myself. Like holding it in the one hand, and I don't move anyway on stage a lot, and the mic would slowly like drop, so the sound guys in the back like just pumping up the level to, and then boop, starts feeding back. So then I saw a couple of old specials of like Seinfeld, Norm Macdonald, a couple of those comics, and a few other comics today that leave the mic in the stand. I was like, well, this solves that problem. I'm just going to leave it in the stand.
Yeah.
So now I do that, but a lot of people don't like that because it almost sends, some people think it sends a message to the audience. It's like there's an obstruction in the way. The mic stand is in the way. Mm. So it's almost like you're being guarded in a way.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe it's hard to know. Like you could say, well, I got big laughs, but then you could, but how much bigger would your laughs be if you moved around a lot and you had the mic out of the stand and you care? Like, I don't know the answer to that because I just feel like a cheese ball when I like prowl the stage like a panther.
Yeah.
Like you see these comics, they're just running around, they're walking around and like aiming their jokes at certain, then they go, I'm going to tell a joke over the left side now. And I know that's what you should do, but I just can't do it. I can't bring that. I never learned to do it. And now to do it would just be a weird, it would feel like I'm pretending. I don't know. Fix me, John. Fix me.
I got my hands behind my head right now.
He does. He's chewing gum already.
Oh, I don't know. John, well, you know me. I know a lot about making people laugh from the stage.
No, but I'm saying, like, there's a thing that you... There's a way to just remove any barriers. Give yourself the best chance to be heard and be accepted.
Yeah.
Which we all want on some level. But as a speaker, it's very important to be like, okay, I'm on your level. I'm doing this. And so, yeah, you want to... If I was teaching a stand-up class and I saw a clip of me, I would say, well, this is what you're doing wrong. You know,
I just don't know if there's a right and a wrong. I think that's where to me, your jokes are the focus.
That's what you want to believe.
And you deliver them well.
Okay.
So, like,
Say more things like that.
It's not that I don't. I mean, perhaps it would make. And I have seen you move across the stage before.
No, you haven't, John. I don't
I've
move.
I've seen you point an audience member and go.
Oh no, I do that. Yeah, right. I mean, I'll aim. I'll go. I'll pivot. It's like an oscillating fan. It's more like a typewriter. It's like set up. I'm moving. Punchline. Ting, and I reset, and I go all the way to the beginning. Kids, a typewriter is this thing that we used to use.
You used to be one in here until Caleb borrowed it. I think he was typing vows for his wedding. So
oh, that's
kind of neat.
He put a
new ribbon in it. If you're listening, Caleb, I need that back.
I'm just kidding. A shout out of some.
But no, I don't know, man. I kind of think it like you have a cerebral delivery. You know,
yeah,
so.
And timing is everything. I don't mean that it's everything. I just mean there's all these things when you have to analyze yourself and go, could this be go from an 8 to a 10 if I did this? And I don't know. I'm not saying I'm willing to just uproot everything, but it is worth thinking about. I don't want to not move around on stage because I'm afraid to do it. I want to not move around on stage because it just doesn't suit my delivery. And I don't know which one of those it is.
Not moving is not necessarily a foible. You know what I'm saying? It's not like something is, you may not be doing anything wrong.
Mm.
I mean, you're using a scale of 8 to 10 and the truth is, all of this is subjective. We're making up things.
Right.
Well,
you're just going to 8 to 10, Johnny, and you're actually a 3. So you're already delusional.
I don't know, man. You know, audience, I think you and I both struggle with, and even in my own recovery process. It's so funny. So we went to a virtual service on Sunday, and on our staff call Friday before I left to go out of town, we were talking about it. And in the old days, I've always been very concerned about what it looks like to the people, what we say.
Right. How you're being perceived.
Right. And we had two issues. We had a weather issue, which could be resolved by Sunday, but we're at the church right now on a Sunday evening because I just got back and you got back. And the parking lot's covered. We could have.
The walk is bad.
Right.
And
could have cleared it and salted it and everything, but we don't want to, we're already in a weird place. And most churches here are at 15% right now until all of this lifts, but it is getting a lot better. So we had that and we had a possible exposure issue that we wanted to just be safe on, because if we, so we're talking about, well, how do we say this and how do we say that? What do we say? And I said, well, I was going through all of these things. And then because people pleasing's been a thing for me my whole life, I was like, actually, guys, I just stopped and go, actually, guys, I don't think I really give a crap because I'm not going to care. I care about the people.
Yeah.
But whether or not I got this press release that we're basically going to make just perfect for them to go, well, I just think maybe they should.
Yeah, let's massage these.
Right. We have to lead and not lead. We're going to lead where we're going to go and other places we're not going to go. And at some point we're going to do it. And you're going to it's almost giving people way too much power to worry about that.
Yeah.
Instead of just leading them. And if they don't like where you go, I mean, that's just part of it. Tell me you don't like where we go. But I don't want to I'd rather have that conversation than try to make sure we always say things in a way where you never tell me you don't like it. I think that's the difference. So when I think about preaching, I know preaching and comedy are two very different things, but writing, when I'm writing for an audience, you go, I want to write something that I agree with.
Yeah.
That's super important.
Right.
And I want to write in a way that would reach me. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if I write something in a way I think that wouldn't reach me, then I start to feel disingenuous to myself that I'm not being authentic. Yet then sometimes something will come out hey, you're not reaching a whole group of people unless you say it like this, or that's too research based, or that's, whatever. And, or not enough, if you really want to reach people, you're gonna have to go further with that. So, but you know the difference between further and farther, by the way?
No.
Farther is a physical distance, and further is a metaphorical one. In general, is what most people think. So
interesting.
Yeah. At any rate,
I think they just get used interchangeably.
They do. They do. Yeah. So I've been editing, working through edits from an editor a lot.
Further and farther.
And that came up. So,
huh.
But I edited the editor, so I may be wrong. I mean, looked it up again, but I feel like that she used farther wrong. Now she found a good 5,000 things that I did wrong. So she's got the upper hand.
There is a critical spirit in some of these editors. I've noticed.
Just making it better, man. It hurts though. It didn't hurt. So it hurt really bad at first when I started writing.
Well, you want there's an editor. You know they're going to find something because it's their job,
right?
There's this weird pipe dream Like, I do this with jokes, too, where you go, I think this one's done. And then, like, yeah. you want it, like, you have this dream that it's done, out of the box.
Yes.
And that you don't need to do anything. Wouldn't that be great?
I wrote this racism book with Reggie. It was supposed to be 70,000 words for Zondervan.
Right.
I wrote 91.
91 words. That is not a book, John.
91,000 words.
Oh, that is a lot. That's hard to say.
It was very concise.
You wrote a pamphlet.
To the point. And so when I turned it in, it was like right before Christmas. And I was like, nah, dude, I poured my life into that book.
Uh-huh.
Like I poured, buddy, you're talking more research. I have a stack. You could ask Laura. There's a stack of books that lived in my house. Still there. It's in a box now because I have to reference them still. Of material things. I mean, I went deeper than I've ever gone on any topic. I mean, I'm into conservative, nationalistic politics. I'm into history. I'm going through Reconstruction and the election of 1876. I'm going into the terms of white privilege and Christian nationalism and the beginning of the conservative evangelical movement.
I've not heard of any of these things. Have these things been in the news?
It's coalescence with Christianity. I mean, like, it's so much. And yeah. when I turned it in, I was like, okay. And she came back. She was like, look, I can't get to this anyway for a few weeks.
Oh, right.
I'm going to need you to trim it. And I was
before she would even read it, she was like, I can already tell this is too many words.
Well, she said, and I knew it
My head hurts, John. Yeah. Go ahead and
she
cut.
She was so kind.
Oh, okay.
She said, I haven't looked at it. She said, I'm just telling you, yeah. I can't get to this anyway for a few extra weeks. Why don't you go ahead and try to trim it?
Right.
So I trimmed it down to 72. And it was more than anything I've ever done in my life in a book. It was like bleeding myself out
yeah,
with tiny
like
little razor
off
blades.
Your arm.
It
yeah.
was like, God, what is going to make it? So the unintended consequence of all that cutting, I turned it in, now she's gone through it, and she just hands back the edits.
Yeah.
Now it's the reel I have to go through. The unintended consequence, I'm going to have to meet with her tomorrow, and if she's listening, I'm so sorry. I'm embarrassed because when I cut everything mm-hmm. and put it all in, I think I cut all the transitional ideas between a lot of things.
Oh, so it feels like jump cuts.
It feels first. She's like, how did we, in my mind, well, yeah. I mean, there's probably 2-3 things in between here that made it made sense. And so it looks like that.
It's like deleted scenes in a movie. You're like, why did that guy kill that guy? Well, right. That scene didn't make it into the movie. That's why you would know.
Now, I probably gave the reader more credit than I think a lot of editors do, you know, like I'm thinking, okay, what topic we're on, but a good editor will help you know, hey, you can't assume that. You cannot assume that any of the readers are just tracking with all the stuff inside your head, you know. So she was really good at that, and I think the book is much better, but I have now, though, because of all the transitions, I just added about 8,000 words back to it. So
John,
I don't know what we're going to do.
Now you got to.
Now she's going to be like, we're going to go cut this.
Could you take all the words you've cut and make another book? It's like the B-sides.
I've kept them.
There you go.
But no. If you think this was a jumbled, non-transitional mess.
We'll release that book under my name and just see what we do. See what we got.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you're right about, like, not... We talked about that last time we did the podcast about not leading with the opposition in mind. Not making your... Now, there is a time to think about how this affects your perception. There's a time to go, am I being perceived correctly? There's a time for that. But like always thinking about an imaginary group that has pitchforks and torches that is waiting for you to make a false move, that's not a free way to create any kind of art or any kind of leadership. There's a quote that I used to think of all the time, and it was something about, I can't remember who said it, but it was better to write for yourself and have no public than to write for the public and have no sense of yourself. I don't know who said that, but
mic
it's a
drop.
And it's a good one, right?
It's real good.
Because, yeah, if you just, all you do is write for, I bet they'll love this. Like, you lose your only, it's the definition of pandering. I mean, I see that in comedy a lot. You know, I know comics, you know, if you get to know them, you know their personal, you know, politics, you know their personal opinions on things. But sometimes they'll be like, I got to go out here and, you know, bang this gong. And they don't really feel that way. They just know that this is the thing to do to get, you know. I mean, you see it. I mean, I see it so much. I'm like, where are my weed smokers at? You know, automatic huge applause or whatever at a comedy club, you know. It's like, you don't even smoke weed, dude. What are you doing? Oh, no, I like to get them all. okay, man, whatever. But that's like, that's not you. You're not being yourself, really.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think the thing we're all afraid of is if I am myself,
yeah,
it might not.
If they reject me as my real self, what would that look like? That's the devastating thing, yeah. Right? So if you protect yourself from that devastation by not fully being yourself, you feel like you're insulated from that pain. But you're dying a little bit every time.
Yeah.
Because like eventually for me, I would end up with a show that I hated, even if it was killing.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, but it's crap. You know.
There is always that. Of course, we're speaking from a very privileged state because we get to do artistic things
yeah.
as a living, and lots of people don't get to do that, and I understand that. And it may not be that we get to do that forever. Like we didn't always do it.
Well, believe me, this year has taught me that it's yeah. like I appreciate the opportunities more. We talked about that in the very beginning of the pandemic, because when work starts to come back, I really do feel like I'll appreciate it more, like I did when I was just starting.
Yeah.
And I think I have. There's like I'm going when I leave from recording this, I'll go do a show at Zany's tonight, which is my home club in Nashville. And like, there is something about just like, I'm going to go tell jokes to strangers tonight. Like it yeah. feels like it did in the beginning almost again.
Yeah.
So, which is good.
Well, and you're much more well equipped now and know the road. And
yeah,
I think some ways, you know, people like us, I think sometimes we do get in our own head, and the longer we've done it, the more the pressure is to do it better and do it well. And you have a different kind of pressure when you're first starting out. There's an excitement to it.
Yeah.
And so again, these are all sound like, look, I know this. If I'd heard somebody when I was on my fifth rejection from a publisher, you know, act like, oh, you know, it's just so hard after the expectations are, 'cause you write so much, you know, and again, I'm just a collaborator. So that's not even for the most part, I get a few of my own things. So I'm still very much a working writer who gets a lot of no's. I got a no this week. I mean, so I get that, but being a working writer is a privilege in and of itself that you get to do that. So, but this, I think just this idea that if you're going to do something worthwhile that you are proud of, you got to be okay with the fact that everybody else might not buy into it.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing of going, like if you go viral, like I've had some clips now that have started to get a lot of views, like my dry bar special, the clips started coming out. Mm-hmm. And so that means, well, they have 6 million or so subscribers. So that means 6 million people or so get a notification, new clip. And they'll just, you know, a million of them will go watch it. Well, now a million people have seen the clip. Well, even if only 0.5% of those people don't like it, it yeah. feels like a very vocal minority if they leave a comment. Mm-hmm. You could have 100 comments in a row, and then one comment be like, I don't get this guy, you know, and you just go, ugh. But like, that's the price. Like you can just go, you can be anonymous and just be like, well, I've had 14,000 views on this other clip, and hey, there wasn't very many comments, but nobody hurt my pride. But if you're going to have a million people see what you do in a day or two, there's going to be some of them be like, I don't get it. And then you have to just be okay with that.
It's huge.
And I'm not okay with it, Joe. That's why I want to talk to you about
it. I asked them to pull my clips. I cannot take all this criticism. No, it's true. I remember the first, I ever told you about my first agent.
Mm-mm.
So I'd written the Reggie book, the first one. We got the Thomas Nelson deal, and a guy named Mark Batterson. You know Mark Batterson, pastor in DC and author.
He's written a bunch of books.
Got connected. He came and did an event here, and,
yes.
and we got connected. I may have emailed him actually out of the blue before, and he actually responded. He was just so kind to me. And I was like, you know, struggling writer and asking questions. And I used to like I still like his books. I'm saying I was reading a lot more of his books there when he first started writing. And he connected me with his agent.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, it's Mark Batterson's agent.
Right.
You know, guys in Nashville.
You're in.
We meet. He signs me. Let's do this, mm-hmm. you know. And we start talking. And back then, and you're going to laugh. Like, the story now in retrospect is so funny. Back then, I was working on this project called No Arrivals.
Yeah.
And it just kept, I just was just writing everything that came to mind on. I wrote for like 2 years on it, and it was like 3 books. It was 150,000 words. Actually, he said, hey, here's the deal. man, I want to see what is making your heart, like, this is how agents will get you, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be in the John Driver business.
Yeah, you tell me when. What is, like, setting your brain on fire right now, you know?
Oh, wow.
It's like, man, no rivals.
No one's ever asked my agent. So. I've had 3 or 4 agents, and not one of them's ever asked me that, but okay.
What's moving your heart right now?
What's in your heart? It's like Delilah. Delilah.
And I was like, well, there's this thing I've been writing. He's like, I want you to bring it all to me. Like, I want you to just, like, okay, it's going to give me a few months.
So you fire hosed him with $150,000.
Well, it wasn't quite that. I went, thought, I have an agent, I have an inroad, and I'm going to go. And I just went, and for the next, like, 2-3 months, I finished it. Man, I wrote everything about the whole thing I could. Uh-huh. It was like, I don't know how many chapters it was. It was crazy. But I brought it to him thinking it was a safe place. Because mm-hmm. Because I'm real relational. Like, man, so I'm going to the whole point. Like, I put myself now into someone else's, under their care.
Yeah.
So I brought it to him. I remember I printed it. And we met at the Panera in Green Hills, in Green Hills Mall.
Oh, it's a very fancy Panera.
It was very fancy. Yeah, because he lived in Green Hills, you know. So here I am driving into Green.
It's interesting when you have, like, areas of the country and even your own city where, like, it could be a chain restaurant, but it's like the higher end version of that. I don't know what that's about, but it's like, we don't just have a Hardee's, sir. Okay. Yeah. We've got a Hardee's with a fireplace. You're like, okay, whatever. I don't know.
We serve crumpets, not biscuits at this Hardee's. It was right next to Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, wow.
Very prestigious, or prestigious as some say. Mm-hmm. Here's another one of those words. Yeah. And so, I remember, like, I'm driving to Green. It's so crazy because I'm like this. I know this is dumb. And I don't remember having some, like, class moment with it because I'm driving an old beater. But I'm thinking, you know, hey, I'm driving into Green Hills.
All right. To meet with my agent.
Huge printed manuscript.
I got a stack of money. You thought, I got a stack of hundreds right here.
Well, no, I just thought, hey, this is great. I always have that, like, you know, your gift to bring you before great people.
Right.
And
you didn't think
that
it was, say, kindling.
Right. Well, I didn't think it was, like, amazing. I just thought, finally, maybe someone will read it.
Yeah, of course.
And they'll tell me, you know. Yeah. You know. And so I brought this guy my whole soul.
Yeah.
And I gave him all the caveats. It's like, hey, I'm aware that this is huge, but you asked me to just get it all down.
Yeah.
I think he said, actually, I think what he said is vomit it all out. It was like some sort of way. Much worse than the whole brain on fire heart thing. Yeah.
What's setting your brain on fire and you need to vomit it out? This guy's very, he needs to be a writer. This is a very colorful language.
I don't know why he was an agency and not writing. At any rate, I brought it to him. He took it. Uh-huh. I think I gave him a disc as well, but I think I wanted,
like,
this.
Like the ebook or something?
You know what?
It's John, here. This is a radio thing.
It's here.
This is a podcast.
I just realized it's behind me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's right there in that box.
Oh, boy.
It's a manuscript box. Anyway.
The shelf can barely contain it.
And
setting the shelf on fire.
And so I remember, like, I don't know, a month later, I got this email. And it was like, hey, read through some of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to paraphrase it because I think it's pretty close to it. I don't really get it.
Oh, no.
Best of luck to you in the future.
Oh, best of luck.
Yeah, it was like a...
Dear John.
I'm like, are we... Like, we have a contract.
Oh.
Nope, we don't have a contract. It's over.
We need to see other people.
Yeah. And it was like someone took a baseball bat to the crotch. Like, it really was like
not you, but someone. Just like you're watching it, like on America's Funniest Home Videos?
It was like someone else took a baseball bat and hit me in the crotch.
Okay,
with it.
Thank you. That's better. Are you sure you want to be a writer?
This is what the editor was saying. Like, what are you talking about? I've been giving you all this credit.
That's going to be on next in the foreword of your book. Reading this book was like John took a baseball bat and hit someone else in the crotch, and I watched with glee.
I just figured you would know I was talking about me.
Okay, it's fine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that is a weird moment, though. Like, I signed with a big agency a few years ago, and, like, for the first year or so, every time my agent would be like, hey, let's do lunch, I was like, he's breaking up with me. Like, I was, like, ready for the, not making enough money for him.
Oh, yeah. Well, needless to say, I was not a big fan of agents after that for a while.
Yeah.
Until I landed the best agent that there is. Mm. Like, he's unbelievable. But my first meeting with him was like, this was for the Tim Hawkins book.
Yeah.
And you had connected me with Tim.
Right.
We went to dinner or lunch.
I connect people, John.
Dude, it was great. Tim and I hit it off.
Yeah.
I met his brother's manager. We talked. We had a good book idea. Mm-hmm. We were off to the races. I had it. And then
I think I helped shape that book idea, if I remember correctly. We talked about the whole making it a diary and having mm-hmm. like foreboding like thoughts in there that he would that would come to bear later in life.
You know, it's like, too late to get points or royalties.
I know. I just remember this. Like we, you know, I think I.
You are absolutely huge to give an opportunity, and I'm still so grateful.
I need to write a book, don't I?
You do.
Man.
You do. And I know a guy that can help you.
Okay.
Tim Hawkins. And so, anyway, we went to eat at Ted's
Montana Grill.
Montana Grill.
Uh-huh.
Had a great time.
That's still there?
I don't know.
He's still making those buffalo burgers,
down
bison burgers.
West End is where that one
bison
was.
Is supposed to be like better for you, but it's a little drier.
That's why it's better for you. It's
that's
the
what
fat
I mean.
That's getting you.
I know, but it's what makes a burger a burger.
Remind me to tell you about my like 2 weeks of just utter. And again, I understand people don't like our dietary journey.
I don't think they like it or dislike. We don't know.
We don't get
feedback.
We assume they dislike it all. Maybe they're sitting right now, just like
oh,
on the edge
tell me
of their seat.
Yeah, exactly.
So I remember Tim's manager Todd called and said, "Hey, man, listen, we like you." Mm-hmm. Here we go again. We like you, and we like to move forward. But there's this agent that's been calling us for like 7 years.
Uh-huh.
7 years. And I was like, oh, dude, you don't need that agent. I can walk you right into Thomas Nelson. I've already done with Reggie right now. I know the editors. I know the whatever. He was like, well, we feel like we at least owe him.
Yeah.
He's followed up with us for 7 years. We owe him a right to have a conversation. I was like, man, you're going to pay 15% for nothing. Like, I was so against it. And then Todd called back, and they'd met with him for an hour. And his name was Robert Wolgemuth. And Wolgemuth sold them in an hour. Like, because if you ever had an hour with Robert Wolgemuth.
Oh, sure, yeah. He's a heavy
like,
hitter.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Like, he's the... And so I was so like, what? Oh, no. He's like, well, look, here's the deal, John. I know this hurts a little bit, but he's the quarterback. I remember Todd said this. He's the quarterback now.
Right. So he gets to choose.
He gets
you
to decide.
Or another way more experienced writer.
Right. A funny writer or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, well, okay. And I remember having this, like, moment.
So you got to audition now for a job you thought was yours.
I already had the job.
Yeah.
You know. And so I remember, like, but I had this, like, and I'm not afraid to say that I feel like God whispers things to me in moments of stress, especially. I had this, like, hey, just don't freak out. Just hold on and see what happens. So I had this call set with Robert Wolgemuth.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing he said to me was, he said, so I've been looking at some of your stuff online, and I'm really interested in your Mennonite theology.
Oh,
another John Driver who's a Mennonite theologian. I thought he was joking. I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
I was like, and then turns out, like, I think he had family members in his ancestry that were Mennonites.
So lucky you didn't
so
like,
he's trying to connect
go off on like a bunch of weirdos, their buggies.
I didn't do that. Yeah. But at first I laughed. I thought I blew it. But he was that was the most important phone call of my writing career. Was way, I mean, again, Tim Hawkins was an amazing book to get to write, but this was so much more important. I've written 20 other books because of that phone call. And I remember that guy told me, he said, look, Robert said, listen, I'm an author as well, and I know what it's like. I mean, the other guy, like, again, baseball bat, this guy was like, listen, he said, we know that we've been after Tim Hawkins for 7 years, and he wouldn't even speak to us about any of this stuff until you came along, so we get it.
Right.
And we really, really hope you're the guy. Now, we're going to put you on a stage and you have to be able to do something. We're not giving you the book right now, but we're cheering for you. Like, we want this to happen. And it was such like a relief kind of thing. And then the first sample I wrote, which is always, Robert's like a mentor of mine now. I sent this thing, and you freak out when you send that sample.
Oh, sure. You hit send and then you're like, is he reading it?
Yeah.
If it's been 20 minutes, you're like, has he read it now? Why haven't I heard back?
And it's often 2-3 weeks.
Have you ever seen the movie Funny Farm?
Yeah,
Chevy Chase?
Yeah.
When he writes the book and then he sits his wife down in the cabin and makes her read it while he watches her. And when she gets to the certain part, he goes, hey, yeah? And she goes, what? And he goes, you didn't get to the funny part yet. She goes, what? With the part with the squirrel. No, yeah, I read it. And he's just like, oh, and he starts panicking. And then she ends up having to tell him that she didn't like it.
Yeah.
And it just like almost destroys their marriage or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what you're doing. You'll be like, oh, come on, it's not reading.
Yeah.
He read it. He hates it. He hates me.
And I was way less healthy then than I am now. I still struggle with it, but I was way. And so I remember I got an email. I sent it like 10 o'clock that night. I got an email at like 5 a.m. the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert said, hey, as a writer, I know what it's like. And this is what he said. I'll never forget it. to throw a grenade over the wall and to be sitting on the other side waiting to hear an explosion.
Yeah.
You want to hear what impact it's going to have, and you don't know. He said, so I just want you to know, me and my wife are sitting in bed, have my laptop open, and we're laughing out loud. We really like it so far. Just wanted you to know.
Huge.
I'll get back with you, but this looks like it's going to work, you know. And he just gave me this. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh. So it was just such a gift. You just never know who you have. But because because it was a stupid sample. I wrote a bunch of ridiculous, like I went meta, like you wouldn't, I know you never read the book, but I went so.
I did read the book. You don't think I read the book?
I don't think you read
the book. I read the book, John.
What was it called?
It's called Diary. It's called Diary of a Jack Wagon.
By, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Anyway, but that
Tim
was
Hawkins with John Driver.
I think it was one of those that had my name on the cover, but not the title page.
Oh.
And it was it was right next to Bubba Wall.
Like, what's our smallest font that we can have on here that they can put your with?
I'm doing a book now. My name will not be on the cover. It's the first one.
Yeah, okay.
But it'll be on the title page. So how does that work? I don't know. It's very interesting.
Do people read the title page?
I don't know. And do I tell people that? I don't know. I'm really excited about the book, though. They're great people. It's going to be awesome. So
with. But you're writing, you've got, you're up for a couple things now that you're like totally okay with being a ghost.
I got rejected on one.
Yeah. The one we were talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they said I was a perfect fit. They just wanted someone who wasn't
a perfect fit
doing other.
We need somebody who.
Less perfect.
Yeah.
No, it was great, actually. They remember from the future, but they said because I'm doing other projects, they wanted someone who's going to be like totally dedicated to it for the time. I was like, focused? What?
Yeah.
I can do this, probably.
No.
I don't know. I'm shaking now. I'm embarrassed. When I talk to the editor more, I'm shaking. Johnny, I told Laura, it's like, I'm not sure that I've not been fooling myself this whole time that I actually write books for a living because this doesn't look like that I do, according to this. So we'll find out.
But, well, I can't wait to find out. You've got other skills, John. You'll be fine.
I can weed eat.
Yes.
I still can. It hurts my back a little bit.
Maybe like one of those shaved ice trucks.
Oh.
We could do like a food truck, John.
Oh.
What kind of food truck would we have? Like, what do you think you cook well that you could make like mass produce?
I cook well?
Yeah.
Or what could I get my wife to
teach
me?
Like you get a griddle and a thing. Like I think I could have like a grilled cheese truck that would just like set the world on fire.
Well, the grilled cheesery is already like a big deal.
Well, I mean, this could be a different one. This is a different spin on it.
What would you do? Would you?
Lived bacon. In the grilled cheese?
They already do that. You need to do something unique. See, this is our problem.
What about like a...
We're late to food truck culture. We're late to everything. Why are we always so late to everything?
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it's interesting that people, like, food trucks are expensive.
Like, oh, yeah, they
you
are.
You go to a food truck and be like, you get a burger, you get your fries.
$40.
And it's $40, and you're like, this is...
I'm eating on the sidewalk.
You're sitting down on the side.
Well,
in a parking
you're paying
lot.
For the experience. You're
yeah.
like, this,
I'm afraid for my
on
life.
My shoe.
Yes. It's dumb.
Someone just robbed me of my burger.
Yeah, but there's bacon in the grilled cheese. Oh, I didn't.
What was the one we used to always go to with Andrew all the time?
The Haas burger.
Yeah.
Stuffed burger.
Stuffed.
With the cheese in between the patty so that when you bite into it, molten lava.
Yeah, it burger.
Cheese.
And you loved it, though.
I don't know.
You were like, man.
I feel like the cheese on the burger is a good solve.
It's never hurt so good to burn my mouth on that level of cheese.
It just feels irresponsible and reckless.
Johnny, you know you're supposed to let it cool for a second.
No.
You were just going right for it.
Yes.
And you feel like they're being irresponsible.
It's food, John.
You were the reckless one.
That's why I like a burger more than a steak, because like a burger is ready. Like a steak, you got to like, okay, the A1 or cut it up. You got to have someone cut it up for you. You know what I mean.
Do you cut up your whole steak before you eat it?
No, but it's just the whole thing of like, it's a lot of waiting around.
And you put A1 on it?
No, but
it's ridiculous.
Ketchup. It's a lot. I'm the 7-year-old. It's a lot of, I don't eat anything on my steak now. But I get it medium. I was a big like medium well done person most of my life.
There's no taste.
I know. It's just like the bison.
I could have told you this.
I had to learn. I know, but I would have thought, yeah, but it's raw. I'm going to get E. coli. I would have fought you on the whole health.
Do you know how many things I try to convince you about related to food that you don't listen to? And how many things have I turned out to be right about? The steak is at least one. That's one. What if coffee is next?
I told Curry I was going to try coffee this year.
Okay.
I feel like it's my year. It's my coffee year.
You need someone to listen. We could blow this the first try if someone hands you the wrong thing.
Curry's a good guy.
Okay.
And we got the Keurig.
It needs, I think you need to go for Starbucks first. You need like...
But if I can't mass produce it at home for less than a $10 or whatever the Starbucks
Listen,
is...
Listen, if we were going to...
How much is a Starbucks, like a real, like, a real deal Starbucks? It's like $8, right?
No. Depends on what you get.
Yeah.
If you get... I get a Americano Breve, which means steamed half and half with a single pump of sugar-free cinnamon dolce. That's the... It's about... I don't know, $3, $4.
I think I want
Starbucks.
I think I want actual sugar in mine.
Okay. You can have the regular cinnamon dolce.
Okay.
If you want.
I used to get the caramel apple spice.
Where?
At Starbucks. When other people would be like,
but
that's gotta go get
a thing.
That's
not a coffee.
It's a cider drink,
no.
I guess.
Okay. That's sweet.
Yeah.
Ooh, dog, that's sweet.
Oh, yeah.
Do people up do northern rednecks say ooh, dog?
Ooh, dog. Ooh, dog.
Ooh, doggy.
Ooh, dog is sweet.
I say doggy spank a lot.
What?
Remember Andrew and Terry used to say that. They had some guy in Crossville.
Uh-huh.
They go, doggy spank. And I say doggy spank.
Doggy spank. What's the, give
that's
me the
something
context.
About spanking a dog. I don't know. Like, that's how, Ted.
But I understand. Well, how would you say it? Give me a sentence where you would say doggy spank.
It's like
spank.
An expletive. Like a dog spank. That's a.
That's not a. I've
look
never,
at that snowdrift. I've
never heard that in a million years. That's no, a thing you say?
I don't know. I may not be using it as the 20, true Crossvillians. I don't know. I probably edit myself in front of you
is
because
it like,
of the
is it like,
crippling shame.
Are you?
Not like you. It's like something is so. It's kind of like this. Like people always say that.
Like dadgummit. Like that, dog spank it.
Yeah. Or like this idea that the pancake is so good you want to slap your mama, you know,
okay,
that kind
sure.
of thing. So,
yeah.
So you want to spank your dog, you know.
It's a it's so good you want to abuse an animal. Is that what you're saying to me?
You were okay with hitting your mother?
No. I've,
how come that doesn't bother you?
Well, my mom's
See,
dead, John.
This is
that.
Wow. Wow. Johnny always says that to me, by the way. If I ever complained in my whole life about family stuff,
yeah.
If I was like, man, every time you're like, you know what? I'm so glad.
My parents aren't around.
Right. And it was like...
What a relief.
Wah, wah, wah.
I can't even talk to them, if I wanted to. But
you go ahead, though. Keep complaining
yeah.
about all the stuff. This fountain of life that you have to struggle with and deal with. So, yeah.
How is your mom? She's good. She got the vaccine, right? No? Yes?
She has part one.
Part one.
Yeah.
She's on her way, man.
I heard there were two ladies in Florida that got arrested. Have you heard this?
The guys that dressed up like old ladies.
I thought they were girls who dressed up like old
oh,
ladies.
I thought it was two dudes.
I thought it was women who dressed up like old women, and they made it through the first one, and they got caught on the second one.
It's two women, though. I thought it was two guys.
Know. Laura read it to me in the car.
It seems like a very Florida story, not to generalize, but have you heard the whole thing where you can type your birthday and then Florida man, and you just look for news on Google. There's always a Florida man robs Wendy's with alligator. Like, there's always a Florida man that did a crazy thing on your birthday.
Yeah.
It's a great Google fun
what
exercise.
What are the listeners we have from Florida?
I don't know, and I actually really like Florida. I think it gets... The reason Florida is crazy is because everybody goes there to retire.
Yeah.
So it's a cross-section of all of our lunacy. So you can't blame Florida for being Florida because, like... It's a guy from Connecticut who got tired of the winters, and he moved down there when he was 72 because
yeah.
he can have guns. And, of course, he's crazy. He's going to rob a Wendy's with a
now,
alligator.
I'm the one. If my editor would ask, can you help me understand the connection between him wanting to get away from the cold weather mm-hmm. and the need for guns? Was there some...
Well, it's just the idea that there's no... Isn't there... There's no income tax in Florida. Is that correct? There's a lot of reasons to move to Florida. The mild winters... The income tax... The... Just, you know, the if you're more conservative politically... You know, and you're like, this is Connecticut. I'm tired of this. So a lot of people move there. So I'm saying, like, it's a microcosm of the lunacy of America. So you can't just be like, oh, Florida people are weird. No, we're all weird, and we go to Florida. Like, you vacation in Florida.
Yeah. All of us weird people.
And you drive like crazy. You drive like a crazy person on the interstate.
Yeah.
You shake your fist at the other person that's also coming back from Disney.
Yeah.
So we're all nuts is what I'm saying.
And we all go to Florida.
Yeah.
Eventually.
You're going to end up in Florida.
Yeah. I hope to. Like when I'm sitting on thinking right now
uh-huh.
about where I want to go, it's generally Florida. Like I would take my family.
It's warm right now in Florida, dude.
Yeah.
There's not everywhere, but it's warm in parts of Florida.
We don't really know that, but it's possible.
Yeah.
It's warmer
it's
than here.
It's closer to the equator.
Which we never did tell the story. I'm going to tell it real quick. So last Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Speaking of weather.
Rest.
That's the
yes.
transition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is a segue that you would not have to edit out of the book.
No. She'd be like, oh, nice. In fact, at one point she did say, way to go. You started a transition. Yay.
Oh, man. In the comments. She's giving you little gold stars and stickers now.
But the transition was bad. But she's like, you put one. And I was like, I swear, I do write things and usually put transitions. I just edited 20,000 words.
So you didn't just write anywho and then go on to the next thing?
In other news.
Yeah. What else is going on? Dot, dot, dot.
So I was leaving for church. I was speaking on Sunday morning. I left about 7. My wife was leaving for the second day of a tournament in Franklin with Sadie, and we were leaving about the same time. Mm-hmm. And it had not snowed, but they said there might be some ice in the road. And, Johnny, I got into my four-wheel drive truck and got all the way into my road and came down a hill and could not stop. Basically, the road looks a little bit wet, but what it was freezing fog.
Right.
That it doesn't look foggy. It's like it's coming up off the street, and the moment there's this bit of I've never seen anything like it. It was like the street turned into like an air hockey table.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like it. So I went off into a ditch. I drove myself. I called Laura. I knew she's right behind me. I was like, do not crest the hill. I may not have used the word crest in a moment.
My love, do not crest thine hill.
My heart.
Halt, I say.
Oh, that's so funny. And so,
use great haste.
You made me goose honk over here.
Yeah.
I've never been healthier. So she pulls into a driveway and she's sliding all over the place. I somehow managed to get back up that hill and down another hill to get to her. I'm going to put us all in the four-wheel drive truck to drive home. I come down that next hill and it's worse. It's like getting worse as the moments pass, Johnny.
Yeah.
And my family sits there in that driveway and watches me.
Yeah. Just power slide your way to them.
Apparently they're just watching me come down, and I do a complete 180 in the street.
They're slaloming.
Put the back into this other ditch now and just crash right in front of them, basically.
Oh,
into the
ditch.
And so now I'm facing uphill the opposite direction. Laura's like, just leave the car. And I was like, I'm not leaving the truck. It's my truck, and another car is going to come over the hill any moment and do exactly what I just did.
And hit your truck.
So in four-wheel drive, I drive in the grass because the street's impassable, unnavigable, some might say. Mm. And I drive up the hill in a ditch to get to another driveway.
You're on someone's property.
Yes.
Okay.
Just tearing it up in mud, but I finally get it out of the ditch and into the driveway and park it over off the side of the driveway. And basically, Laura and I are now there with two vehicles and our daughter 2 miles from our house. Mm. I call Seth because I know he has his snow plows and all that stuff. And he's like, look, dude, if the streets are like that, even my truck will do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So no one's coming, Johnny.
No one's coming to save you. You didn't call me, I noticed, but I just have a little key.
What are you going to do?
I would not have been able to help you. I think I was on my way to Branson, so I really wouldn't have helped you either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was on my way to get stuck there.
You had gotten out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so basically, Laura and I, we had some extra stuff left over in my truck, and we bundled up, and we couldn't even walk on the street.
Yeah.
By that time, it had gotten so slick. And not everywhere in Mount Juliet was that way, but that way it was. And we had to call. We canceled church that morning. A couple, only like three of the team made it. A lot of them had to pull over, and they were stranded, all kinds of stuff. But it just didn't look like it, though. It just looked like normal, okay, maybe a little bit of ice on the roads. Nope, the whole road was like a big, again, air hockey table. And we hiked 2 miles in the ditches back to the house, and that was our big adventure. So,
man.
Yeah, there you go.
But you lived to tell the tale, and then you went back and got your truck later.
Yeah, because they salted the road later that day, and it was fine. And then, of course, we had, 7 inches of snow and ice.
Snowmageddon for Tennessee.
But, I feel like that was a different story than freezing fog.
Only the listeners can really tell us whether or not that they...
And they probably won't.
They skip ahead. Here we go.
Southerners.
Tell me your plane story now, too. They delayed us on the runway for 45 minutes.
Can you talk more about writing books and telling jokes?
Look, this is what we have.
This is kind of what we do.
This is who we are. If you don't like this, you really don't like us. And we take it as a rejection, and it's fine. Rejection can be helpful.
It's like your
editor. Iron sharpens iron.
Hey, I want to say my editor's amazing. She really is. Like, and she's going to make the book so much better. I always tell them that, like, thank you for making
the book better. Do you think she listens
to the podcast? I don't know. But if she does.
Just in case.
I hope she knows that I appreciate all the work.
I wonder how many words she would edit out of the podcast.
A lot.
She'd be like, guys, you said,
this would have been so much better if, she's great. She's great. Even though we don't care if you don't like it, we actually would like it a lot more if you did like the podcast.
Go like it and find us on talkaboutthatpodcast.com where you can see all the archived episodes. You can go to Patreon if you want to kick in a few shekels, help us make more content. and it helps us, you know, just make more things.
Yeah. Johnny's not eaten in a year.
I have been eating.
Oh, okay.
I promise you that. But it has been a weird year and a very, it's a leaner year.
I'm glad you're out working. That's
yeah,
awesome.
I'm working out and out working. But I'm going to, I'm going to do a show tonight, and then I have three shows this weekend.
Wow.
This is the first, weekend in a while that I've had three things in a row.
That's great.
It's probably been a year since I've had something like that, where it's like an actual, you can call it a tour.
Yeah. And, it's all going to come back, man.
John, I want to believe.
Hey, listen, we have a little pool going, and I've been saying since last year that April of 2021 will be.
Is that the one? That's the day when the floodgates open?
I said by the end.
Oh, that's herd immunity for
by
you?
By the end of April,
okay.
Life will begin to look more normal, is what I said.
Yeah, that's just that's very
no,
easy to.
No, but listen, we've already now vaccinated over.
Begin to?
Yeah.
You can say begin to now.
I don't think we've begun to yet.
I'm getting ready to go do comedy in a room full of people.
Well, then I'm even better than I thought.
That's pretty reckless, though, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. But you wear a mask to and fro from the stage.
To and fro?
To and from.
Hither and thither.
Stop not thy comedy.
Hold thy carriage, my love. Slide thou not.
Some might call that a slippery slope, Johnny.
It is a slippery slope.
Start speaking a British accent to your wife.
Yes.
My wife, when she does her British accent, which she will only do for me in the privacy of our own house mm-hmm. when no one else is around.
Yeah.
We'll watch British shows at night.
Mm-hmm.
And one of us will get up to go get a bag of chips or something right now, which we should not be eating, but we're doing it.
Oh, right.
I'm back there.
You can't watch Netflix without food.
I'm back in December again.
Yeah.
And because I hit this big deadline, I've been very stressed. And I just, you know what I do when I'm stressed? I eat.
So you get up to get the chips.
And she'll do some British thing, like she'll say something in a British accent, and Johnny.
Is it good though? Is it a terrible accent?
I love it.
Oh, okay. It's attractive to you.
I love it.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. When she does it, I laugh. Because I know it's a big deal for her.
Right. It's like she's showing you a side of herself.
Yeah.
She's being silly with you.
And I love it.
It's a vulnerability.
Yes. That's the whole point of this whole episode.
Right.
Showing who you really, and she's so funny. So funny. So anyway, that's what I'm saying. Speaking in a British accent, I remember the first time I did in college for a play, we had to do an English class. Remember you were around for that. And I was horrible. Still am at it. But trying to do it. Is like in front of other people who are good at it because you're really good at it.
No.
You can do Scottish, you can do Irish, you can do Australian, you can do all of them. So I know certain words in each, but you could speak right now.
I don't want to.
You're not going
to
do it, though.
No, I'm not being vulnerable.
Okay, I get it.
Too scared of rejection.
But hey, you can be vulnerable and leave us a comment and let us know other topics you'd like for us to discuss on
yes,
the podcast.
Please do, and we'll try to get to it. We've got the time, you guys.
We do apologize for not having an episode last week, but thank you guys for faithfully listening this week. And we'll see you hopefully next week, pending any other major weather issues. Here on
Talk About That.
Jesus wants our fears to launch us toward faith. Then he grins and says, "Do you trust me? Because together we can do this." With Mornings with Jesus, you can start your day in a positive way. Find hope through inspirational stories and scripture. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Mornings with Jesus. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.